James from survivalpunk.com, back with another podcast this week. I've really got to get on a better schedule. It's been weird recently. But I'm back. I'm back with a podcast. This will be a solo episode. No couch potato mic this week. We could never find time to record together, so maybe expect more solo episodes. Definitely want to make sure that there is a podcast out every week like there should be, and not missing weeks. So, I don't know. We'll see. That's the goal anyway, so expect more podcasts more frequently, and everyone should be happy, rainbows, unicorns. This week we will be talking about medicinal herbs. So there's a couple, last episode, last episode we did wild plants that are edible around you. Obviously we're focusing on mostly the United States and mostly the southern part of it. Although a lot of the, plants from last episode were, you know, a much broader place. Like most of North America had those plants, you know, and if you're in Europe or Asia or Australia, then maybe some of these plants aren't applicable to you. And if you do live in those places, send me an email or a voicemail. I'd like to hear input from my international listeners. So yeah, some of these plants may not necessarily apply to you. As always, I tell people to learn the ones around them. So, you know, there's no point if, plantain's on the list. Plantain's pretty much everywhere. Mullein's pretty much everywhere. But some of these may not be local to you. So there's no point in really learning about them. Me learning about the medicinal uses of, say, the prickly pear cactus that does not grow in Tennessee natively, you know, like you may find some in a potted plant somewhere, but you're not going to find any growing in our luscious, beautiful forests. You know, there's no real point in me learning about those. There's no real point in me learning about medicinal or edible plants that grow strictly in Japan. It may be neat to know, but it's not really, doesn't really matter. I don't need to know it. So learn about the ones around you. And I usually try to say, and this list will not be 10, but learn 10 edible wild plants around you and 10 medicinal wild plants around you. And there can be overlap. Probably better to learn 10 of each, though, you know, i.e. like sumac has a lot of medicinal uses, and we talked about sumac last week as a wild edible. The bark, the berries, all of those have medicinal uses as well. But sumac is not going to be on the list this week, so we're going to learn an additional, I actually think it's going to be 8 this week. So I'm assuming that I'm going to run longs, because some of these we need to dig into. Others not so much. Others are pretty cut and dry. Pine trees are on the list. Pine trees are a wild edible and a wild medicinal. Everyone can identify a pine tree. There's no deadly pine. You're not going to stumble through the woods and be like, oh, I died because I ate deadly pine. There is no deadly pine. Where is it? Yarrow. We're going to talk about yarrow today. Yarrow, apparently in some of the books, field guides, is discouraged from new people because they say it can look like two other plants and you could misidentify it. I watched a video discussing the three. You're not going to misidentify them. If you see what yarrow looks like, you'll never confuse it with deadly hemlock. You just won't. They're two completely different. The only way I could see you getting confused is looking at line drawings in field guides. Actual pictures, video, and in life, you know, looking at it, there's no way you'll confuse them. So I went ahead and put it on the list, even though some manuals are like, oh, don't bother with yarrow. No, I think you're good. So, also, medicinal, like a disclaimer here, this is not medical advice, I'm not a doctor, etc., etc. And there's limitations to an audio podcast. I'm not going to super, like, dig deep in descriptions and how to identify them. Without you being able to see them, you're really not going to be able to, like, I can describe it for you. And, you know, I may describe yarrow and you see, hemlock. So I'm going to include links to where you can find pictures and identification things. Good field manuals will help you find these. Not a podcast. You're not going to listen to this podcast, walk through the woods and be like, oh yeah, there's purslane, there's wild lettuce. Some of the ones are very easily to identify. Plantain is plantain, and there's nothing that really looks like plantain that's not plantain. Mullein, once you see mullein once, you'll be like, oh, there's mullein, there's mullein, there's mullein. It's pretty identifiable. So with that, let's preamble some stuff. First, that you can send me an email if you have ideas for the show at james@survivalpunk.com. Pretty easy. Not hard to forget there. So send me an email if you have questions, concerns, comments, whatnot. I try to answer those. I get a lot of spam and a lot of BS in the inbox, so sometimes things get buried, but I try to dig through them. If you have questions for the show and you'd like to hear yourself on a call-in show, and if I get enough calls, then I'll just do another call-in show eventually, you can call me at area code 615-657-9104. 615-657-9104. You will not get me answering the phone unless some settings go awry. That goes straight to a voicemail. Leave a voicemail, and when I get enough, I'll answer them. Don't call me with questions that you want immediate answers to. That's what the email's for. Just because I don't check the voicemails that often. They come to my phone, but I'm not gonna call you back and be like, oh yeah, this is how you do that, that, or that. Like, call and leave a question or a comment. Like, if there's something you want to see, show ideas, that kind of thing, you can call those in as well, and I'll listen to them. With that, let's just get into the show. Let's talk about our first medicinal wild plant. And that's plantain. Grows everywhere. You've probably seen it. I personally have used it several times for several different things. And when people say they get insect stings or whatever, I always tell them just go put some plantain on it. It works great, you know, and it's everywhere. Like, it's my softball into medicinal herbs. Like, you know, like people are like, oh, you know, I got stung by one of those asshole red wasps, and you know, I'm kind of swollen up here. It's painful, you know, and I'll show them a picture of plantain. I'm like, go look in your yard, find this, you know, macerate it, sort of rub, put it between your hands and just tear it up a little bit, rub it, and then put it on there. Like, I had a sting on my neck. Did that, put a Band-Aid on it to hold it in place. The next day, I could not, and this was close to when I went to sleep. So it wasn't like this was in the morning and I had it on there, you know, for 2 days straight. This was closer to evening. I put it on there. When I woke up the next day, I literally could not find where the sting was. It's just gone. So, and that asshole red wasp, it hurt for a little bit, but you know, I'd say after 30 minutes to an hour, I couldn't feel it anymore. So, obviously, I'm not allergic to wasp stings. So, if you are, yeah, your mileage may vary. You might want to see the hospital. You might want to use an EpiPen. So, just saying. So, plantain. And I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to have links to where you can see pictures of these. And read more about them. You know, I'm not going to give you information to go on. I'm not going to give you a PhD in wild medicinals. And, you know, these should be pretty universal, but like I said before, you might want to try them in small amounts. You might want to use a universal edibility test to see if you have reactions to these. You know, they are medicinal, but you may have a reaction to it. Just like some, you know, some pharmaceutical medicines you may have reactions to. So don't go whole hog. They may not be the magic pill for you. You may be allergic to them. So, and so the link for this one is going to come from Wellness Mama. I've, she's in some of the like survival groups I'm in. So I'm fairly familiar with her, and she does some other websites. Like, I think it's like Health Mama or something. She has like a little network going. Kind of what I plan to do with like my punk network, like Survival Punk, Nutrition Punk, which has never put another post on it. but anyway, so plantain. Like I said, it's what we see mostly is broadleaf or narrowleaf here in the U.S. It has a stalk that it shoots up out of it. There's sort of big, ovally shaped leaves. You'll have to go see a picture of it. The leaves can be made into a tea or tincture. This is said to help with indigestion, heartburn, and ulcers when taking internally. Externally, plantain has been used for insect and snake bites as a remedy for rashes and cuts. It's a natural antibacterial, anti-inflammatory properties make it great for speeding recovery of wounds and for itching or pain associated with skin problems. A tea made from the leaf can be spread into mosquito bites to ease the itch. That's, I mean, and, you know, a lot of people would consider this to be, you know, a weed, an annoying weed in their yard that they want to get rid of. And it has all those things. And, you know, it is edible. You can make it's bitter, but you can make like a salad out of it. You can saute the greens. It's better with that, I believe. Use it like you would spinach. And do I have things? Let's see. Herbal uses. I mean, tincture. Plantain has been used as a panacea in some Native American cultures and with some very good reasons. Many of its active constituents show antibacterial and antimicrobial properties, as well as being anti-inflammatory and antitoxic. The leaves, shredded or chewed, are a traditional treatment for insect and animal bites, and antibacterial actions helps prevent infection of the anti-inflammatory helps to relieve pain, burning, itching, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, this is more read from the Wellness Mama, so it's, you know, and she was saying in the article she has on it that her son was bitten by a brown recluse, and she put plantain on it, and he never had the skin decay, never the necrosis of the skin. So that's pretty amazing. I believe I talked to one of the survival medical people, so like maybe Patriot Nurse, and she said plantain could possibly work for like an MRSA infection. Don't go out and avoid medical treatment for this. Look into it on your own. Not giving you advice, but if the shit hits the fan, you don't have any antibiotics, plantain might be your go-to for any sort of things like that, with all the antibacterial, you know, things that it has. Once again, not medical advice. So what do we have next? Mullein. Mullein's one of my favorite plants. I showed my stepson Skylar recently mullein, and the leaves, how they're velvety and smooth, and it's, you know, sort of nature's toilet paper. But it has a lot of medicinal uses as well. So not just butt paper. You can do a lot of things with mullein. I have a quick sort of description of how to identify it, but like I said, I'll have a link so you can see it and read more on it. Mullein is a biennial herbaceous member of the Scarphoherbaceae family, bearing silver green and extremely fuzzy leaves, very velvety in my opinion, and growing up to 8 feet in height. The first year, it appears as a basal rosette of leaves. In the second year, it sends up a huge, deep root, sends up a huge flower spike with many brightly, densely clustered yellow flowers, which only open for one day. Did not know that because I've never seen them open. It will grow in compacted, poor soil. The deep roots help to break up the soil. So, who was it? Paul Wheaton was talking about how mullein is one of those pioneer plants. It comes into damaged and bad soil and sort of makes the way for, you know, other plants to come in. Like when you have damaged land, mullein comes in along with some other deep taproot things that come in, break up the soil, uncompact it, you know, and turn it back into lush area. The leaves, flowers, and roots of mullein plant are used medicinally for the treatment of various inflammatory diseases, diarrhea, asthma, coughs, and other lung ailments. Very good for upper respiratory issues. An oil made of the flowers of the mullein plant is very commonly used to treat pain and inflammation associated with earaches for children and adults. Mullein might even be able to fight influenza, herpes virus, and some bacteria that cause respiratory infections. You know, if you have a respiratory issue, mullein might be the one to go to. Probably has many other medicinal uses too. So, a lot of these wild medicinals are sort of attributed with a lot of different things you can use them for. And then if you look at like the modern studying, it tends to focus in on like one or two things. Like, you know, historically it's been used for all of this stuff, but we've proven that it can be used for this. And in mullein's case, respiratory issues, it is actually very effective in. So, you know, and it's free, it's everywhere. And, you know, if you have bad soil, get some mullein and help break it up so that you have, you know, you have a plant doing the work for you, and then you have, you know, a surplus of things you're getting from it. You're getting medicinal uses. You're getting free toilet paper. I was reading anecdotes or history things on where some Native Americans were smoking mullein leaves, and it was helping with their lungs that way. Like the smoke was going in and helping their lungs. So, it's a lot of uses. Up next is yarrow. Yarrow, I wasn't super familiar with. Like some of these I'd heard of a lot, and I'd heard of yarrow. Like I think I have yarrow seeds and I planted them in the yard, but I hadn't used yarrow, you know, much like mullein and plantain, which I know of and have used. Yarrow, I have not found natively. So, like I said, some of these, you know, like I have a list and I look around for things. So, look around your area and see if you can find any of these. And if try to create a category. Like, if you come across something you don't know, take a picture of it, post it somewhere like the Facebook groups of, like, plant identification things. Like, hey, what's this? Hey, what's this? I came across one recently where I'm trying to identify everything in my yard. And this one that I had a lot of is after posting some pictures and doing some research, it's a thing called smartweed, which is edible. So, you know, I'm not mad about having a wild edible growing everywhere. So yarrow, what do we have on yarrow? Sorry. It's a long stemmed member of the sunflower family found in the wild throughout the temperate regions of Northern Hemisphere. It can be recognized by its highly segmented leaves, Millefolium, literally meaning thousands of leaves, and the clusters of daisy-like white or lavender flowers at the top of the stalk. Helps in skin wounds, stops bleeding, anxiety, reduce inflammation, relieve in headache pains, fevers, cardiovascular support, urinary support, menstrual support. Like, yarrow is one of those ones with a long list of things that it can do. And some of these are clinically studied, like mild sedative for anxiety. A 2012 study published at the Journal of Entopharmacology looked at the anti-anxiety effects of yarrow in animal models. Researchers used a hydroalcoholic extract of the aerial parts of the yarrow on animal subjects in field tests. They found that it had anti-anxiety effects after both short-term and long-term administration of subjects. Furthermore, they found that Yarrow had effects similar to diazepam, Valium, and common prescriptions for anxiety issues. The study showed that it remained effective after short-term, then repeated administration. So, let's see what other uses. Let's sort of dig into a couple of these. It's interesting that some herbs have opposite action. So, where is it at? Yarrow is one of several herbs that herbologists call amphoteric. The term was borrowed from chemistry, where it's used to describe a substance that can be both increase and decrease the pH of a solution, which is interesting. In herbalism, it is used to describe a plant with seemingly opposite actions. For example, yarrow is known as a hemostatic, stops the flow of blood, and a diffusive, blood-moving herb. This bidirectional action on blood flow explains how it achieves multitude of actions listed below, which I guess with, so in modern pharmacy, in modern medicine, things tend to be like extruded out to their extreme. So, you know, like something does something really, really well, but it doesn't do the opposite. You know, it's, if you're used to one extreme action of pharmaceuticals, this amphoterism seems to be quite mysterious and perhaps implausible, but not so much, like sort of natural. Let's see. However, herbalist Sam Kaufman offers another explanation. He posits that yarrow appears to be supporting clotting in wound healing by the exact same mechanism in which it works on moving the blood in, say, varicose veins, by breaking up the stagnation and supporting the movement of new blood cells to the area, thus speeding up the healing process. So it's really only doing one thing, but that one thing works for multiple things. So yeah. Let's see, yarrow uses and benefits. Let's see, yarrow tea, hot or tincture for fevers. Fever is the body's normal response to infection. It's a natural defense mechanism. Dr. Janice Sullivan, a professional of pediatric clinic care and clinical pharmacology at the University of blah, blah, blah. She explains that a high temperature triggers the body production of infection-fighting white blood cells, which inhibits the growth of viruses and bacteria. And that if you lower the fever, you may be affecting the body's ability to respond to that infection. So I think what I read was yarrow will make you hot. So yarrow for digestive support. The Cherokee and many other tribes have traditionally used yarrow for digestive support, which makes sense because of bitter aromatic herbs help digestion by stimulating the production of bile and pancreatic juices. Yarrow is also used by a tincture to support the smooth action, blah, blah, blah. Headaches. Yarrow for headaches. The anti-inflammatory properties of yarrow are thought to be helpful for dull, pounding headaches or migraines that seem to drag on. Let that sink in. You have something that could be growing in your backyard that'll help with those horrible, dull, pounding headaches that just... I don't, like, sometimes if I sleep too long or something, I have just this dull in the background headache behind the eyes that just will last the whole day. Like, if I oversleep, then I know I'm going to have a headache the whole day, and it's just there, like, in the background. And instead of reaching for my beloved Excedrin Extra Strength off-brand, you know, I can get a herb that will handle it. Modern research has confirmed the historical use of yarrow to relieve pain caused by a broad range of conditions. Yarrow teas and tinctures contain salicylate-like derivatives such as sigmasterol and beta-sardesterol that reduce the inflammatory process, which may accelerate healing. These compounds stop the formation of enzymes necessary for a series of chemical reactions that cause inflammation and pain. Yarrow poultice, compress, or salve for wounds. Scottish Highlanders still make an ointment from yarrow to apply to wounds, which makes sense given its pain-relieving and healing properties. On and on and on. Let's see, how to use yarrow for wound care. Wound powder. Dried yarrow can be applied after wounds are cleaned. Dried yarrow can also be used to make a wound healing salve. Yarrow tea can be used to wash cuts and scrapes. Infused oil, cardiovascular, on and on and on and on. Let's see. Add 1 tablespoon of dried yarrow flour to 1 cup of boiling water. Cover, steep for 30 minutes. Strain and serve. That's how you make yarrow tea. I will have a link. This is from Mommy Potamus.com. And I'll have a link so you can read all about it. She shows you how to make tinctures, identification, how to grow, on and on and on and on and on. So, there you go. Next up. Hold on. Sneeze. Pine. So, the pine tree. Pine tree has so many uses. So many uses. Not only does it have, 8 edible parts, it has lots of medicinal uses as well. What I'm going to read from comes from Survival Sherpa, a good friend of mine. I've talked to him, known him for a long time. He's doing a lot of good stuff. I still think he should buy survivalsherpa.com and not run it off a WordPress site, but he's doing very well for himself. So anyway, pine needle tea has the following medicinal properties: antiseptic, astringent, and inflammatory, antioxidant, expectorant, high in vitamin C, more than oranges and lemons, I believe, for colds, flus, coughs, congestions, and even scurvy. So during the apocalypse, if you need to keep from getting scurvy, pine needles, especially here in the Northern American regions. It has shikimic acid, the main ingredient in Tamiflu, is harvested from pine needles in Asia. So, when I keep preaching that, you know, during the cold flu season to drink pine needle tea, that's a double reason. And Tamiflu is expensive. Pine needles are free. Pine resin applied to skin conditions. Arthur Haynes describes on his YouTube channel how pine pollen provides multiple avenues of protection against radioactive cesium. That's interesting. Warm poultice of pine resin will draw splinters and foreign matter from the skin. The inner bark, the cambium, can be fashioned into an antiseptic band-aid for cuts and scrapes, or deep-fried in bacon fat and made into delicious food. Chew the softer sap straight up off the pine tree for gum for sore throats and colds. You could pre-make gum with these ingredients: pine wax, beeswax, or pine sap, beeswax, and honey. So, I learned a few things there I did not know. Hi, Skylar. So the pine tree, good to have for medicine. Next up is stinging nettle. Something that I have looked for and not found, and I guess I need to look harder, because stinging nettle seems pretty prolific. So I don't know why I can't find it. Stinging nettle. This is going to come from DrX.com, because this is the most concise article I could find on it. What is stinging nettle? Or Urtica dioica. I'm no good at these weird Latin names and shit. It's a perennial flowering plant that has been used medicinally for ages, dating back as far as ancient Greece. Today, it can be found all over the world, but its origins are in the colder regions of Europe and Asia. The plant usually grows between 2 to 4 feet high, blooms in June to September, grows in best in nitrogen-rich soil. It has a heart-shaped leaves and produces yellow or pink flowers. While it is best known for the stinging reaction that occurs when the skin comes in contact with the fine stinging hairs, also known as trichomes, located on its leaves and stems. When processed and used medicinally or edibly, stinging nettle has a number of helpful health benefits. According to the Department of Dermatology at Penn State University College of Medicine, most stinging nettle products are made from the stems and leaves, but the roots also have the roots also have pharmacological qualities. This herb has anti-inflammatory qualities, which affect the treatment of many health issues. Five benefits to stinging nettle. Benign prostatic hyperplasia and urinary issues. BPH symptoms are caused by an enlarged prostate gland pressing on the urethra. BPH sufferers experiencing varying levels and increased urges to urinate. Incomplete emptying the bladder, painful urination, post-urination dripping, and reduced urinary flow. A testosterone-induced BPH study on rats has shown that stinging nettle may be as effective as treating this condition as finasteride, the medicine commonly used to treat it. And I'm sure stinging nettles are a lot cheaper. Doctors are still not entirely sure why stinging nettle alleviates some of the symptoms, but clinical studies infer that it contains chemicals that affect the hormones that cause BPH, osteoarthritis, and joint pain. Sufferers often experience joint pain, typically in the hands and knees, hips, and spine. Nettle works alongside non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NASIDs, to allow patients to decrease their NASID use. Because prolonged use of NASIDs can cause serious side effects, this is an ideal pairing. Hay fever. Histamine production in the body creates an adverse reactions related to allergies. Allergies cause uncomfortable congestion, sneezing, itching, and more. Stinging nettles, anti-inflammatory qualities, affect a number of key receptors and enzymes in allergic reactions, preventing hay fever symptoms if taken when they first appear. Bleeding. Certain products containing stinging nettle have shown that when applied to the skin, it can reduce bleeding during surgery. The product called Ankeford Bloodstopper is made up of alpinia, licorice, thyme, common grape vine, and stinging nettle, and has been shown evidence of reducing bleeding after dental surgery. Eczema. Eczema is a dry, itchy skin rash that can last on sufferers for a very long time. Because of stinging nettle's antihistamine and anti-inflammatory qualities, it can be a natural treatment for eczema. As the Penn State University College of Medicine study referenced above notes, sufferers can use a combination of nettle taken orally to tackle the eczema internally, as well as a cream to provide relief from the rash's itch and redness. More research is needed, but stinging nettle is also said to promote lactation, stimulate hair growth, help control blood sugar patients with diabetes, help reduce bleeding connected to gingivitis. Interesting. Treat disorders of the kidneys and urinary tract, provide relief from water retention, prevent or treat diarrhea, decrease menstrual flow, help provide asthma relief, heal wounds, treat hemorrhoids, stimulate contractions of pregnant women, treat insect bites, treat tendonitis, treat anemia. How do you use stinging nettles? You can make a nettle tea. Stinging nettles and fires can be dried, and the dried leaves can be steeped and made into a tea. Cooked nettle. The roots, stems, and leaves of stinging nettles are edible. The leaves can be steamed and cooked much like spinach. It's best to use along young leaves. They can be used in nettle soup or added to other soups and stews. Nettle can be also pureed and used in recipes like polenta, green smoothies, salads, and pesto. Don't eat the raw leaves because they will still have the stinging hairs until they are cooked or dried. Topical nettle. Nettle extracts and root tinctures can be applied directly to joints and painful areas of the body. It's also available in cream form. Stinging nettle capsules and tablets. Stinging nettle capsules and tablets can be taken orally. There is inconclusive evidence on whether stinging nettle capsules or tablets for allergy relief are better ingested on an empty stomach or not. So there you go. Stinging nettles. That's high on my list to find. I'm sure they're growing here in Tennessee, 100% sure, and I need to go find some locally somewhere. Next up is purslane, which is the penultimate one here on the list. I was wrong. I thought it was going to be a long episode. It may turn out to be a short episode, but it will be an episode nonetheless. Purslane. I've heard of purslane a lot in all the survival manuals and whatnot. and it's another one of those ones that I have not personally found, but I'm positive is around me, and I just need to look harder. Or it's kind of like sumac. I'd heard about sumac a lot, and I'd seen videos of sumac, and I was like, God damn it, I know sumac's got to be around here. Like, why can't I find sumac? And as soon as I found my first sumac tree with sumac berries, I saw them everywhere. They are like everywhere in Tennessee. So it was just like a switch in my brain. Like, once I saw it and was like identified, it was like, oh, that's, it's like that white car syndrome. Like, when you have a white car, you see nothing but white cars on the interstate. You're like, oh, white cars are everywhere. Now I see sumac everywhere. So I'm sure once I find it and identify it and like I'm used to it, then I'm gonna see it everywhere. Purslane. Often weeded from gardens, purslane is an edible ground cover that is full of omega-3s and magnesium, two things we need a lot. Try purslane for 6 medicinal uses. You can try to understand the superfood in any of these 5 purslane recipes. 6 medicinal uses for purslane. Caffeine antidote. Since purslane is full of magnesium and melatonin, it's a great antidote if you've consumed too much caffeine. Magnesium, melatonin. So purslane itself is good for sleep. Magnesium and melatonin are both good for sleep. So there you go. Immune booster. Since it's high in calcium, magnesium, and numerous other vitamins and minerals, purslane can help bolster your immune system. Insulin booster. Purslane is believed to support the body's own insulin supply. Purslane extract can stabilize the blood sugar insulin levels according to numerous studies cited by the National Institutes of Health. Psoriasis treatment. Ugh. Psoriasis treatment. Foods high in omega-3s like purslane prevent leukotriene production for psoriasis sufferers. This can help prevent inflammation that leads to itchy, scratchy, red skin associated with this condition. Heart health. Low magnesium levels contribute to cardiac arrhythmia risk. Consuming 250 milligrams of magnesium a day can help reduce arrhythmia risk and lower your blood pressure. 1 cup of purslane contains about 30 milligrams of magnesium. And that's a good amount. Headache prevention. Some chronic tension headaches and migraine sufferers are impacted by magnesium deficiency. So it looks like most of magnesium's greatness comes from its high concentration of magnesium, which many people suffer from low magnesium. So, and I've seen lots of other, purslane is one of those like great superfoods that, I mean, all those things it has in it, it's getting high up on my list of things to find and eat. And lastly is one that was going all over the survival sphere community a year or two ago. And that's wild lettuce. Like, wild lettuce was just being touted as like the greatest thing since sliced bread and, you know, natural morphine in your backyard. So what do we got on wild lettuce? What's this one say? Wild lettuce is a very common medicinal plant in North America and is often considered to be a noxious weed in yards, fields, and waste places, sidewalks, cracks on the roadside. Be careful when harvesting that you don't use wild lettuce where it has been sprayed with herbicides to kill it. The usual tall plant is easily identified by the dandelion-like leaves that usually clasp the stem, the prickles on the mid-vein of the leaves in most species, and the milky sap that exudes from the stems, flowers, and leaves. There are several species of wild lettuce. Some have small to reddish-yellow flowers, and some have small blue flowers. Blah, blah, blah. In the last year, articles on the internet and links on Facebook have sensationalized the use of wild lettuce as a substitute for morphine. In a headline link to a website that sells ebooks, wild lettuce herb contains no opium whatsoever, and people have reported mixed reviews of its effectiveness. It has none of the addictive properties of opium and is much milder. He goes on to say, I can't explain why science seems to say wild lettuce has no substantial medicinal uses, but don't use it because it can be sedating. But that's pretty much the case with herbs. With so much conflicting information, it's hard to know the truth. When I saw it going around, I kind of just assumed it was mostly bullshit that, you know, there's something as strong as morphine grown in the backyards. I'm like, that's very sensational, and probably bullshit. So in this article, I hope to present all the sides of the story, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. I will have a link to this article. It's really long and you should read it, but I'm not going to read it on the air. Medicinal uses and benefits of wild lettuce. Medicinal uses: anxiety, sleep, insomnia. Its properties are analgesic, anodyne, anospasmodic. Lots of things we don't really understand. Parts used: dried leaves. Constituents: bitter latex containing lactuin, lactuone, lactoprin, a trace of alkalides. Wild lettuce is a valuable remedy for insomnia and muscular arthritis. The common name, lettuce opium, as it's known in the official pharmacopoeia, refers to the potent milky latex production by the stems and leaves. There's been a recent internet-driven surge of popularity of wild lettuce as recreational herb. Oh yeah, I think I've read some people are smoking it. Yeah. People are smoking wild lettuce. However, wild lettuce will disappoint those looking for a legal high similar to opium. The powers that have been outlawed in all truly narcotic herbs, leaving only less potent ones available to use without fear of running afoul of the law. That said, this relaxing and sedative herb can be an ally for those needing help to induce sleep, calm restlessness, and anxiety. Preparations, methods, and dosage. When a stem or leaf from wild lettuce plant is broken or cut, it will bleed a thick, milky sap. This sap can be made into an alcohol tincture, lacturium, or the fresh leaves and flowering tops can be tinctured or dried and taken as teas, smoked, or less often in capsule form. Wild lettuce side effects: toxic in large amounts. So, I have yet to find this growing, but that's probably just because I haven't seen it. I'm sure it's around, and when I see it, then I'll see it everywhere. That's wild lettuce. I put it last because I don't believe in the ridiculous amount of hype that it received on the internet. As strong as morphine? No. If it was as strong as morphine, I'm sure the government would have cracked down on it and tried to kill it out. They're pretty peculiar. Like that article just said, if it was that strong, then it would not be as legal and free roaming as it is, even though I can't find it. But, you know, I think there's a tendency in modern medicine, modern pharmaceuticals, to try to make things too strong and too directional, too one-sided. Like, you know, whereas ancient medicines, they did a lot of things. And they did a lot of things fairly well, but maybe not amazingly well. You know, they had, you know, multiple... They worked on multiple points of the body. They worked on multiple things. They alleviated several things very naturally and to a less sharp degree as the modern things. You know, and whereas modern medicine now, we're having to take, you know, we take very pointed medicines that try to only work on one specific symptom that we're suffering from. And a lot of times that directness is very strong, very pointed, and imbalances things in the body, whereas people have to take multiple medications. They have to take one medicine because, you know, the medicine is messing up something else, and it's like a string of medicines they have to take because they're taking this one medicine. These herbs, these medicinal plants, more holistically help the body. They strengthen the body, they more naturally work on it, and they work on multiple things without being so directly focused. So you're not going to have to take like an herb because you took one herb and that's messing up something else. Like all of these herbs by themselves will just make you a healthier person without being, like, addicted to them and having to take, you know, several other herbs. Like, a lot of these you could combine into teas with, you know, several herbs and have a whole lot of effects. But you're not going to have to take additional ones because now you can't get it up because it broke your wiener. I mean, you know, it's like there's all these medicines that you take and they do one thing very well, but then they give you like 27 side effects that you then have to take additional medicines for, and you're on like 1,000 medicines and you're broke and you have no money and you don't really work that well and you're sick. You know, I've never been a big, I don't have any chronic medicines. I don't take any medicines all the time. Except for my beloved Excedrin Extra Strength. And you know, maybe I need to stop doing that so much. You know, it's maybe once or twice a week that I take it now, to be honest. And maybe I need to swap that up for Mullen or something else that cures a headache. So there. You know, and maybe these aren't the ones that you need. You know, maybe I went to this whole list and you're like, well, James, I don't have any of these around me, which honestly, I would be very surprised if not a single one of these on this entire list grows around you. But you need to find your own list, your own ones that are around you, and then actually find them, you know, knowing that Mullen is good for, respiratory issues doesn't help you. If you don't know where Mullen is, you can't identify Mullen and you're not using it. You know, maybe it is very effective for you, or maybe it's less effective for you, but finding it, using it and learning it is the important part here. And doing it now while we have great resources, you know, cell phone apps that'll help you identify plants, internet forums and groups that'll help you identify plants, you know, Amazon to order books from. So get those resources now, learn these plants around you so that when those resources are not available, you're good. You have, you know, you've learned them. You know the ones around you. Like I said, start with 10, start with 5, and grow from there. But learn those, learn like the back of your hand. And, you know, some of these big ones are, they do so many things that maybe, you know, maybe you have to grow a specific one that you go buy seeds for and you grow because it has a very certain thing that it's good for that you need. But most of these work for so many different things that you're good. I mean, I'm pretty sure we've covered about all the bases we need to cover for every medicinal thing that you need. And there's more, you know, like a lot of the ones that we talked about on this list and the, you know, the wild edibles ones also have medicinal uses. So go out there and learn some. I have links in the show notes for books and resources to find. So with that, DIY to survive. Use guys.